Avengers Weekly Ramble.
Hello, it is Wednesday, it is hump day, and that means it is time for Mullinger's Weekly Ramble with me, your friend, James Mullinger. I hope you're all having a great week. I hope you're having an even better week than the royal family conspiracy theorists. Oh my word, have they been out in force? Although, I mean, you know, it is a fair question. Where is Kate Middleton? Have they broken up? Is she hiding because she's got a haircut she doesn't like? Is it something worse? They're saying it's been something like 85 days since she's last seen in public. And obviously there's, you know, been three or four photographs released during that time, supposedly of her, but all of them have been proven to be fake or photoshopped. And the conspiracy theorists are going mad on the Twitter or the X or the Big Bok Lick Lock, whatever it's called. You know, is she alive? Yesterday, of course, there was some terrible rumour on Twitter X that... that something awful had happened to Prince Charles, but King Charles, sorry, it'll take me a long time. Many, many years of saying Prince Charles, King Charles, you know, is Meghan to blame for everything? Who knows? Who knows what's going on? The rumour is Kate Middleton has done a gone girl. People are demanding proof of life. Is she in the Princess Protection Programme? Is she the masked singer? Who knows? I read one theory that maybe she and the king had had a Freaky Friday type body swap and they're having to wait until things go back to normal. Who knows what it is? Of course, there's been multiple rumours online and indeed, I guess, in the British press, who can print whatever they like, about, you know, the apparent, supposed... affair between Prince William and Rose Hanbury. Who knows what any of it is or means? Is all of it a distraction? It all stemmed from a retouching scandal. The scandal that apparently, you know, Kate had retouched her own pictures. I was once myself inadvertently involved in a global retouching scandal when I was inadvertently responsible for the appalling retouching of an actress who I love and admire greatly, Kate Winslet, for the cover of GQ. I was new to the job and did a terrible job commissioning a retoucher to do these pictures, and it created such a scandal. It made front page news all over the world, and it was seen as a huge misogynistic conspiracy, which I can completely understand. You can Google this. You can also read all about it in my next book. I've just completed a chapter about this. And it was front page news all over the world, this terrible Kate Winslet retouching scandal, as to why these morons at GQ had conspired to create this unrealistic, absurd female ideal. And meanwhile, it was actually simply down. It was nothing, you know, there was no conspiracy. It was just that I am an idiot. So that was a big retouching scandal. Of course, this current Kate one is proving to be even bigger than that one. And leading to many conspiracies. I hope everyone's all right, is all I can say. And who knows? Who knows what is going on? What else is happening this week? Another rumor online is that the Bond people, the family behind who own Ian Fleming's estate, Eon Productions, who own Bond, have chosen their new Bond. Aaron Taylor-Johnson is apparently the... he's the man. He's got the job, apparently. Who knows if within minutes this will be disproven. I think, like most people, I was hoping for Idris Elba, who I believe would make a far better Bond. Aaron Taylor-Johnson just seems to be an identikit Daniel Craig. I have been a Bond fan for many years, like a lot of people. As a child, George Lazenby was my favourite Bond, based on the fact that on Her Majesty's Secret Service was the darkest and, to my mind, best of the Bond movies. Of course, there's been many documentaries and so forth as to why George Lazenby didn't work out as Bond. And everyone has their own favourites. I once did a thing for Comedy Central where I interviewed a lot of people, you know, lots of people like, you know, Hugh Grant, Colin Farrell, Matthew McConaughey, and asked them who their favourite Bond was. And it was quite a heated debate, and somewhat evenly split, believe it or not. You know, there were people, believe it or not, coming out in favour of Timothy Dalton. But you can watch that. That's on YouTube. I think it's My Name, and it just says, asks the stars who their favourite Bond is. Very original name. Anyway, so Aaron Taylor-Johnson, not my number one choice for a Bond, it has to be said. But there you go. I don't know how, if there's any truth to this, if it is just a leak. Once spent an afternoon on a rooftop with Aaron Taylor-Johnson for a photo shoot, shortly after he married Sam Taylor Wood. So I guess it would have been very shortly after he starred in Kick-Ass, and back then was a young, handsome actor. And of course, has now become some kind of muscle man body machine, which I guess what you have to do nowadays. This absurd. It's a funny when you look back at what perfect physical ideals looked like in the 60s and 70s. I mean, Sean Connery had a normal body, like most of us men. He had love handles. He had a normal body. Nowadays, why does every single male and female and really any actor in a film need to be absolutely ripped and shredded into this completely unrealistic? Was it the 80s, I guess? Schwarzenegger and Stallone kickstarted this whole new unrealistic body ideal. There was actually a Bond film where they had Robert Ryan, is that his name? Robert someone played what was a character that was supposed to be the epitome of physical perfection, and he just looked like don't get me wrong, he was fit, but he wasn't like this ridiculous fit now that we are supposed to aspire to and have rubbed in our faces everywhere we look. Why can't I want Bond to be like Sean Connery. I want Bond to be just a normal looking guy. Why does he have to have an 88 pack and rippling muscles? That's it. Why does everyone have to look like Thor? I did once spend a sounds like a major name drop, this one, but I did once spend a couple of hours in a hotel room with Chris Hemsworth pre-Thor. Had his shirt off, very nice indeed. We were kind of, can I talk about, I guess I can, I don't work for GQ anymore, I can share this. Chris Hemsworth's publicist looked after Daniel Craig, and so in order to get Daniel Craig for cover shoots, GQ would basically agree to do any one of her other clients that she wanted, featured, we would have to feature. And to show how little foresight and talent spotting skills we had, we all kind of thought Chris Hemsworth was a bit of a joke. She was adamant he was going to be a huge star. We didn't really agree, but we would do this photo shoot. So it was in a hotel room with him. Very nice guy, obviously. Very charming guy, obviously. Incredible body and a good actor. And so we would do these somewhat regular features on him to, little did we know that he would become Thor and one of the biggest movie stars in the world. Anyway, moving on. Do I know anything that's been going on in the news that isn't just royal gossip and indeed rumours and speculation about Bond? I learned something yesterday, very exciting. I'm sure many of you have heard about this. What the heck is going on? Someone's trying to call me. I'm just shut that down. Someone's trying to call me from... Sorry about that. We're not going to cut. This is a ramble. I just keep going. Bucktoosh. Someone's calling me from Bucktoosh. What big old gig is that, I wonder? Yes, one of the things that I'm very excited to learn this week is that the amazing people at Sistema New Brunswick have landed Dan Brown, author of Da Vinci Code, to come here to New Brunswick to perform his musical on stage with the incredible Children's Youth Orchestra of Sistema. I don't know how much you will know about the Sistema, absolutely incredible organization that inspires children and creates so many just unbelievable opportunities for children through music. Ken McLeod is the president and CEO. And I mean, he does so many amazing things. You may have heard about this. Last year, the New Brunswick Youth Orchestra performed at Carnegie Hall. Carnegie, doesn't matter. I'm never going to get to play there. But the New Brunswick Youth Orchestra did play there. They played at Carnegie Hall last year. Thanks to just the incredible, I don't know, foresight and genius of Ken MacLeod, and indeed everyone else. So the 86 strong New Brunswick Youth Orchestra was the only Canadian group to perform at Carnegie Hall as part of the Viennese Masters, which was performance of works by Viennese composers. I mean, what an incredible thing. Did everyone hear about that? Maybe not, because we don't have newspapers here in this region anymore. And that's why I do this, to share. But basically, yeah, so what was announced this week is that Sistema New Brunswick is collaborating with the best-selling author, Dan Brown, author of Da Vinci Code. Other than J.K. Rowling, I believe he's the best-selling author in the world of all time ever. And his show, which is called Wild Symphony, is going to showcase Dan Brown on stage with Sistema New Brunswick. And again, I mean, nearly 5,000 school children in New Brunswick are going to get to attend these performances of Wild Sympathy Symphony, featuring the Sistema New Brunswick Children's Orchestra and Dan Brown live on stage, both English and French. It's just the most amazing thing. I mean, again, if you don't know about Sistema, you can Google it. There was a big feature we did in the Maritime Edit magazine about Sistema. It's in its 15th year. It's grown into Canada's largest orchestral program, operating in 9 communities in the province, and engages 1,200 children and youth, employs 60 professional teaching artists, and the whole ethos, by it's free. So children starting in grade 1 participate for up to kind of 3 hours after school, 5 days a week. I mean, it's just the most amazing thing, inspiring children through arts, through the stage. And I believe it's hitting Dan Brown and the Sistema New Brunswick Children's Orchestra. It's hitting the Kira Amphitheatre, which is the amphitheatre at the Kingsbury Garden, which is one of my favourite places in the world to visit, also one of my favourite places in the world to perform at. It's going to be there on the 12th of June. So that was exciting news that I heard this week. What else? I've had a wonderful week. I hope you all had a great St. Patrick's Day. I was very honoured on Monday night this week to host the St. Patrick's Day special Super Bingo for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick. As you may know, they do a bingo each week. It's the most genius concept. Megan and her team at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick are just absolute geniuses at fundraising and support and raising awareness, and they created this Monday night bingo, which brings together people from all over the province to play bingo. Of course, A, that's super fun, bingo, awesome. B, people can win money. C, of course, it raises tons of money for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick, which is one of the most important organizations to support, and they've been working tirelessly since 1966 to pursue their mission to promote health and literally save lives and enhance recovery in New Brunswick. They operate completely independently of the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada, the only one that does. And so all of these initiatives are all homegrown here. And so I was given the great honor of hosting bingo on Monday night, which was frankly terrifying, because it was obviously done virtually. I was at their offices Monday night. Of course, unlike even with a virtual gig, I wasn't getting instant feedback. Like at least with a Zoom gig, I can see if people are laughing or not. I was worrying. I know how seriously bingo players take their bingo, and rightly so. Serious business, the old gambling. And I was nervous I was going to make a mistake, read out a wrong ball number. I was worried that I was being a bit too silly in between reading out balls. So I will admit, while I was sat there doing it, I felt a lot of responsibility and nerves. And then I went on the Facebook. It's funny how social media is riddled with so much negativity, but it can also cheer you up. And I will be honest, when I went on this morning and was tagged in a ton of posts on the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick's page, saying just how much fun people had and that they'd laughed, it was a huge, colossal relief that I hadn't ruined everyone's Monday night bingo. So thanks everyone for that. That was that was Monday night. Saturday night, I had a warm-up show at Long Bay Brewery in Rosslyn, where I do all my warm-up shows for going on tour. It was actually, I've done about over 50 shows there in the last 3 years. And this was my very first time doing a show at Long Bay on a Saturday night. So, and there's a reason for that. I mean, generally, I'm away at weekends on the road, touring, performing elsewhere in the region or indeed elsewhere in the country. But last week, as you know, was my 46th birthday. So my wife had said, you know, can you not be away that weekend? Be nice to have you actually here for one weekend this year. So I said, no problem. So she then said, okay, what we're going to do on that Saturday night? You know, have a party since you're actually here on a rare Saturday night. And I said, I don't know. You asked me to be here. I'm here, but I am going to be working. so we made, so my Saturday, my birthday party was, doing a 2 hour show at Long Bay Brewery. And it was absolutely wonderful. And I will be honest, and at the end of the show, when I finished my set and climbed off stage, the whole audience burst into the song, burst into song, singing me happy birthday, which brought a tear to my eye. And what a joyful gig. I mean, I don't know whether it was because it was a Saturday night, so everyone was in a different kind of mood, but A, it was the first time that I really felt like the tour show is almost ready. B, what an electric atmosphere in there. I mean, again, and there was tons of people in there that mean a lot to me. Lovely, well, Mrs. Dorian, amazing teacher from K Park Elementary who taught my son River. It was lovely to see her in the audience. Another similar connection, Megan McCracken was in the audience, who is the daughter of Sean McCracken, who is the tireless and fearless and heroic principal of K Park Elementary School, who she's been the principal for my kids for basically pretty much since we've moved here. So to have people in the room that you admire was lovely. Likewise, Mark Stanley and his family and friends. Mark and Cindy Rodaway from Bournemouth. They left Bournemouth, left the UK, and moved to the Kingston Peninsula in 2021. So that was really nice to have others, Brits in the audience, who Mark did have a hilarious heckle where he started shouting about the Somerset Gimp, which is a true story, absolutely bizarre story of a gimp. We all know what a gimp is. Everyone's seen Pulp Fiction, like a black leather clad, what's the word I can use? Because I don't want to call them anything. I mean, there's someone that enjoys that kind of sexual proclivity dressed in head to toe leather. That's what a gimp is. A gimp had been spotted around Somerset in various CCTV things, and they never caught him, or they did catch him. Anyway, my parents live in Somerset, and Mark Rodaway hilariously shouted out, you know, asked if it was if I was related to this Somerset gimp. I emailed my dad about it, having not heard of the story before. Then Googled it, and oh my goodness, Google it, Somerset Gimp on the prowl. I sent it to my dad saying, have you heard about this? And he said, my dad just replied, yes, and they haven't caught me yet, which is brilliant. I was also really touched by the fact that lovely couple in the audience, Jacob and Marina Kays, they attended the show, another show at Long Bay about a year ago. And Marina was heavily pregnant at the time, which made us very worried when she was laughing very hard, because no one wants to have to deliver a baby in a brewery on a stage that is not really a stage, more of a piece of plywood propped up on beer crates. That's my showbiz. That's how showbiz my career is. My stages these days tend to be pieces of plywood popped up on beer crates. Anyway, they came a year ago, and Jacob and Marina, and then a few days after the show, when they came a year ago, they had a beautiful baby boy called Nolan. So I sent them a gift. I sent Nolan a signed copy of my book. He can't read it yet, and he may not want to read it when he can read. But Lovely, lovely people. Marina is also a heroic healthcare worker and nurse at the St. John Regional Hospital. And anyway, it was nice for them to come back a year later to the show, seeing them in the audience. Anyway, what an atmosphere in there. I mean, testing the new material was a blast. I do a thing now where I put a box out on the stage and invite the audience to write down words or subjects or questions, and I will. And what I have to do, it's kind of based on that format set list. I don't know if you've ever seen that, when comedians step on stage, subjects pop up and you have to improvise on the spot a honed perfect routine and not kind of stumble or mumble around it. So in the case of this, I open up the box, I pull out the piece of paper, I read whatever the word is or the sentence or the question, and it is my, I have to on the spot come up with a honed routine. And sometimes it works, sometimes it very much doesn't work and is completely disastrous. And I guess is still in some ways entertaining for the audience seeing me suffer. And you never know. I mean, again, I have no time to self-censor. That's the other thing. It just flies out. I have to warn the audience. I mean, this is why I love these gigs and why I think they attract audience members that want to just have fun, is that, you know, the poster for these gigs does say it might be shit. So if you come to a gig that says it might be shit, it also says, please don't come up easily offended. Because, I mean, I don't have time to self-censor. Like, something pops in my head, it comes out before my brain has even had time to think about it. So some of these questions, some of these subjects that were put in the drawer, I mean, again, they put, intense sport parents was, of course, a very good one that led to some anecdotes about things I have witnessed recently. Another person wrote down anal tissue. So, yes, I had to come up with a routine for a routine on anal tissue, which I duly did. And I don't know if I'll ever do it ever again. Trans animals was another one. Trans animals or trans pets, but yep, had to do it. So it was a really exciting and fun and just not enlightening, but like it's just an uplifting feeling doing these warm-up shows with great people, and just, you know, anything, literally anything can happen in there. Thank you all, by the way, all for messages you've sent, questions. Tim Andrews, shout out to Tim Andrews, my good friend, my good British friend, who also left England to move to the Maritimes. He sent me various anecdotes, which I will go through. He asked me a couple of questions, one of which is very interesting. Tim has asked, He visited Canada, fell in love with the place and the people, and then moved here with his lovely wife and daughter. And Tim and I have met at various shows over the last couple of years. I think he discovered my stand-up during COVID just by chance. Had typed in, I don't know, something into, not Hulu, Tubi or Prime or one of these things, and came across one of my specials filmed at Harbour Station. Unrelated to it, reached out and we became friendly, and he's come to lots of shows. Anyway, he asked me a question, which I thought was very interesting. He said, where is it? Here we go. Would you have, if you hadn't met your wife, he asked me, and you had just visited New Brunswick, would you still have moved there? Which is a very interesting question, because yes, I mean, obviously I talk about how much I love this place and how I fell in love with it. But of course, yes, primarily the reason that I guess the interesting question is, I've said it before, that there is a chance that had I not met my wife, that I could have gone through my entire life in London and never heard the words New Brunswick, which is mind-boggling to think about, that this thing that has become such a huge and important part of my life could have potentially not even been on my radar. So I think had I visited here and not had been in a relationship with someone from here, I still think there would have been a temptation to move here. I mean, it definitely wouldn't have been as obvious, but I certainly think that if I came here and did shows and saw how audiences in New Brunswick and indeed in the Maritimes and indeed in Atlantic Canada and indeed across Canada reacted, I would almost certainly, I mean, when I first did shows at Just for Laughs in Montreal, and then did other gigs in Montreal and Toronto, I knew that I wanted to ultimately live in Canada. So I think then the way that New Brunswick audiences and Maritimes audiences are the best audiences, I think there would have still been a temptation if, as a single person, I came here and did shows and saw how people were, combined with, you know, the beauty, the place, the people, there is a possibility that, yes, I would have still moved here as a single person. I hope that answers your question, Tim. What else? Tim also asked the question, have I ever been in a room with someone really famous but only learned afterwards that they were there? So Tim uses the example of he was in a garage watching a racing car, and he was standing next to a guy kind of chit-chatting with him, and the guy left, and after he left, someone said, you know who that is? That was Nick Mason, the drummer from Pink Floyd. And Tim subsequently became a big fan of Pink Floyd and now would kill to be in a room with Nick Mason, the legendary drummer from Pink Floyd, but missed his chance. He also went to a Texas for a work symposium. Tim does incredible work working with people with mobility issues, and he for many years was driving a van. A mobility van that had a picture of a gentleman on the side of his van. Anyway, Tim went and spoke, went to this symposium, saw an American war vet speak, a triple amputee, a true hero. And it's truly inspiring when you meet people like that. I once went, actually, it sounds like the name dropping again, but with Prince Harry to a hospital in the UK where the walking with the wounded soldiers were being looked after. And it was just amazing, just their spirit and their, you know, you felt you are literally with pure greatness. Anyway, Tim saw this gentleman speak, didn't realize at the time that this guy had a big part in American Sniper, the film of Bradley Cooper, and then didn't realize that this guy was also the guy that had been a picture on the side of his van for many years, wished he had chatted with him. So, I can't think of any. One example I can think of where I narrowly missed someone was that I have been lucky enough to meet a lot of my heroes, and specifically my biggest hero or comedy hero has always been Jerry Seinfeld. I met him a few times in New York, LA, and London. A few years ago, Seinfeld was here in St. John to do a show at Harbour Station. And famously, when he does a show in a town, he likes a town or city, he flies in on the day and then books every ticket in a cinema to watch a movie alone in the cinema. Because I guess he doesn't want to get bugged. But little did he know, in St. John, you don't need to book every ticket because chances are it won't be full. Anyway, it was Saturday morning. My wife was dropping me off at the cinema so I could go and see a movie by myself, because that is how I roll. And I get out of the car, walk into the cinema. I see my wife's calling me. Not proud of this, but I just thought, oh, whatever she wants, I'm going to ignore it. What's she bugging me for now? I need to go and get my ticket. Running late. Got to get the ticket, popcorn. Don't want her bugging me, asking me questions. Didn't bother answering it. After the movie, I called her back. And she revealed that as I got out of the car by one entrance, Seinfeld had just exited the St. John Cineplex from the exit. And we were literally like meters apart. And his blacked out limo or Merc or whatever, his car service was there. And I couldn't help but think that would have been really lovely to see him again in the setting of outside a cinema in St. John, having, you know, had worked on a couple of things together, met in the past, hadn't seen each other for many years, somewhat stayed in touch, but also not really. I stayed in touch with his publicist and his manager, but and I would have thought, oh, that would have been really nice to be able to turn around and go, Jerry, blah, 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 shake hands. And it would have been a nice moment. So that's the answer to that question, Tim. I hope that answers it. Tim also shared a story about he was in a hot tub in Oi Oi. Where's this story going? Tim was in a hot tub in, he went with his wife and daughter, Tracy and Fran, went to Vancouver, staying at a luxury Pan Pacific on the harbourfront in Vancouver, one night treating themselves in this high-end hotel resort, and they're in a hot tub, and there's all these young people sitting around drinking champagne, bragging about when they made their first million. And so Tim and his family obviously rolling their eyes at these vulgar braggarts. And they get out, and then some other people get in, more kind of salt of the earth types, more our type of people. You know, they're drinking out of, you know, they're not drinking out of, you know, bottles of Cristal. They're drinking out of coolers that they've, flasks that they bought by themselves. And Tim gets chatting, and it's like, oh, where are you from? Well, we're English, but we live in Canada. And then where do you live? Oh, we live in Canada too. Whereabouts? Blah, blah, blah. Ends up that Tim and this other group that they have met both live in Waverley in Halifax, and actually live like down the road from each other. Wonderful, small world. Maritimers find each other anywhere. That's lovely. That is absolutely lovely. What else happened this week? Tomorrow, Thursday, the new Simon's store, the first ever Simon's store in Atlantic Canada, is opening at the Halifax Shopping Centre. A lot of the La Maison Simon's family are flying over from Quebec and elsewhere for the big opening. It's being hosted by someone I love and admire very much. My wife, Pamela Mullinger, is the MC for the ribbon cutting and the opening. If you've received the latest issue of Maritime Edit magazine, you will have hopefully seen the feature on Simon's opening. So it's a big deal, big fashion retailer opening in the Maritimes. So that's happening tomorrow. There's obviously been lots of sad news in the last couple of weeks about Saltwire, the Chronicle Herald, and all of the other local newspapers. I joke a lot about how we don't have newspapers here, but but there are some left, and it is tragic when you hear that an organization like Saltwire is struggling in the way that it is. Let's just hope it survives. I mean, our communities in this region need local newspapers. I've made I need them for bloody material. I mean, let's face it, all those headlines, 50 chickens stolen, St. Stephen couple hopes to open Pit-a-Pit. The story about a group of ladies called Mary who play bridge every week with the headline, "The More the Merrier." I mean, we need local newspapers for these headlines. And it's just, it's a very, very sad time where we're losing our newspapers. You know, you've got billionaires, you know, creating a world that's more unequal than ever, and populist politicians kind of spreading misinformation and discord, and the planet's burning as executives let their profits, tech giants basically sinking our local media and shaping this kind of evil new world of social media without any scrutiny. I learned something actually when I was working on an episode of The Debaters in which I was defending local newspapers, which is that whenever a local newspaper folds or leaves a community, everything goes up. The cost of everything goes up. So that means, you know, it could be everything goes up. You know, taxes, council taxes, local taxes, food tax, because there's no one looking out for the little people. So think about that when you support your local newspapers. I hope some of you watched and got round to watching and enjoying last week's weird recommendation of the week, which was, of course, the John Travolta and Jamie Lee Curtis 80s epic, and I will call it an epic, perfect tagline, "Health clubs, more sex than sweat." Hope you enjoyed that. This week's recommendation is one which I was given on VHS by my parents for my birthday. It's another 80s classic. I'm holding the box right now. Interestingly, I didn't know this until I posted about it on Facebook, and the amazing Stephen Cook, famously formerly the just absolute brains of all things maritimes when it comes to arts, culture. Stephen Cook, formerly of the Chronicle Herald, used to look forward to Stephen's features, columns, articles every week. Just a truly amazing writer and journalist, and has done more to support Atlantic Canadian musicians and artists, communities, all of us. And anyway, he pointed this out to me when I posted this picture of Head Office, which is a movie I was desperate to see as a kid. I used to look at the box. The box had a salacious picture of Jane Seymour on it, posing with Judge Reinhold. Also stars Rick Moranis, Danny DeVito. And I did not know this until Stephen posted or messaged me that it's a Canadian film. It was a film made, not set in Canada, but filmed in Canada, and starred the legendary Ron James. That's right. Ron James has a very big part. The Canadian comedy icon, a hero of mine, still to this day doing great work, not just on stage, standing ovations every night across the country, but also creating incredible television shows for Bell 5 TV1. And so that's my recommendation. Check out Head Office, a Canadian classic, forgotten Canadian classic, starring Judge Reinhold, starring the legendary Ron James. That is my weird recommendation of the week. Couple more plugs, and then I will leave you for this week. It's been a hell of a ramble. Can't call it not a ramble. I just learned something. So some friends in England sent me this article that has been doing the rounds, and I don't know if you, I mean, I'm sure lots of people have heard about it. I, for some reason, had not, this has completely passed me by, but there was an article that was in the rounds about Marcel Lebrun, and it was captioned just how this rich guy from Canada did something amazing to deal with homelessness, which is he built 99 small houses in his hometown. And my friends were sending me this article, and I discovered that it's, Marcel is in Fredericton, and he's created what he calls the 12 neighbors community, which is basically a special neighborhood of small holes. He made a lot of money in tech and decided to solve help solve the problem of homelessness in Fredericton. I'm looking at a report here that says at least 2,000 people in Fredericton experienced homelessness for at least a day last year. And he spent $4 million creating 99 homes, affordable tiny homes in Fredericton for the city's unhoused. I mean, literally, why? I talked earlier about, you know, billionaires destroying the world. I mean, why can't more people be doing this? Like, you know, look at what, you know, Elon Musk and Zuckerberg and Bezos are doing with their money, these ridiculous, ego-stroking, dick-measuring, ludicrous things. And meanwhile, this amazing entrepreneur, philanthropist, Marcel Lebrun, he grew up in Cornwall, Ontario, and he moved to Moncton when he was 12. His father, Gilbert, is an eyeglass maker, and he instilled in his son, I was reading an article online here about this. Anyway, he has... So all people in the UK were sending me this thing because the story about this amazing guy doing an amazing thing for his community. And they're like, oh, you know, have you seen this thing that's happening in Canada? I'm like, not only is it in Canada, it's down, it's an hour away from where I live. And then I discover a map, literally like a few hours later, that I'm speaking at I'm doing stand-up at a conference in Fredericton in June that he is also speaking at. So I'm going to get to meet this absolute legend and hero who is showing, millionaires, billionaires around the world what you can do with your money and make a colossal difference. So, yeah, look up the amazing story of Marcel Lebrun. That, what an absolute hero. Thank you so much to lovely Christine Sheehan for messaging me. Very, very kind of you. Christine is the sister of my great, late, dear, dear, missed everyday friend, Lloyd Raven, who you will have all read about if you've read my book, Brits Happens. Lloyd, Raven, Chris, like you, I still think of Lloyd every day. And well, never, you know, I think anyone working in comedy in this region thinks of Lloyd every day, because not only was he an extremely dear friend, everything that is happening in this region with comedy now, it was literally started by Lloyd when he did started the Bay of Funny, and worked tirelessly to promote comedy as a viable night out option for people here in New Brunswick and the Maritimes. So hats off to Lloyd and Chris. Thank you for reaching out. And like I say, send me your questions, letters. I'll answer anything. I'll answer any questions. Tim Andrews actually chooses to send his message to me via voice memo. Sends me a 10-minute voice messages. As he pointed out, he may not come and see me on my greatest hits tour based on the fact that he's watched every single clip of mine online over the years. So this might not be the two of him. Fair play to you, mate. Understandable. Another exciting thing which just happened. I'm sure lots, I don't know if anyone's heard about the Ladysmith Manor. Has anyone heard about Ladysmith Manor? A gorgeous manor that has, a 27-room manor that has opened in Dorchester, New Brunswick, by a British lady by the name of Miriam Andrews, who I met. I was doing a keynote at a New Brunswick tourism symposium or conference a few years ago. And we met, and Miriam and her husband bought this manor. This house was built in 1842. And her husband, the amazing Stephen Trites, they bought Ladysmith Manor. They have renovated it. They were actually living, funny enough, in Kelowna, BC, which is where my brother lives, with his lovely wife, who's from Kelowna. And they bought this manor, and they've refurbished it, created this absolutely gorgeous residence for people to stay. Ladysmith Manor, Google it, will absolutely blow your mind. But then, crucially, and most excitingly, how many times have I said, anytime any one of you has asked me after a show or on Facebook, you know, what do I miss about England? I always say the same thing, don't I? I say, other than people, I don't miss anything except British pubs. And would you believe, Miriam and her husband at Ladysmith Manor are opening New Brunswick's first British pub, The Thirsty Whippet. I've seen pictures, looks absolutely gorgeous. I am profoundly excited to say that the big grand opening of The Thirsty Whippet Pub, New Brunswick's first British pub, is taking place this June at Ladysmith Manor. And I will be performing a show that night. It is, I should have the date to hand, shouldn't I? I will grab it. But most excitingly, my dad is going to be here. My dad has not visited New Brunswick. He's been here before. He'd been here before we moved here. He came here to visit and travel around after my wife and I got married about 18 years ago. But in the 10 years we've lived here, he hasn't visited. But he's coming this June. And on the 22nd of June, I'll be performing at the Thirsty Whippet Pub, New Brunswick's first British pub, at Ladysmith Manor. And it's in Dorchester Crossing, 22 Woodlawn Road. Miriam does have, she's very great on the old socials, So Thirsty Whippet has a Facebook page. Ladysmith Manor has a Facebook page. She also does brilliant videos on YouTube showing the developments and the creation of the menu and the way she's working tirelessly to get proper British beer in. Lots of local beers as well, don't get me wrong, lots of support. Lots of New Brunswick beers, but they're getting British beer from British barrels over. It's an authentic British pub owned by a Brit right here in New Brunswick. Cannot believe I'm going to get to play it on its big kind of grand opening. My dad's going to be here to witness it. That is one of my, obviously my other highlights of the summer is always doing the shows at Yip Cider on the Kingston Peninsula. Kingston Peninsula, one of my favourite places in the world. Don't like outsiders, refuse to have a bridge, just like the old 18th century Greek mythology, ferry boats to get you over if they're working. And for me, Ethan Ash, world-class British musician, Ethan Ash and I are doing 4 shows at Yip this summer. And I cannot wait, at the Yip Cider Dome. Dates are all obviously on my website. Those shows just, I mean, electric. There is nothing quite like that dome. The dome itself, if you've ever seen it, just incredible. Google it, Yip Cider Dome. There's tons of pictures of it on my Facebook page as well. That dome was actually built by a rave promoter from Scotland in the UK. I guess rave promoter, is that the euphemism for ecstasy dealer? Sounds like it, doesn't it? It's built by the amazing Mackay brothers flew over to Scotland to, I guess, be shown how to build this thing with the guy. And there's something about it, just being able to be in a gorgeous dome in one of the most beautiful places in the world, and the side of the dome is open so you can see the water, so you can actually see the amazing, the St. John River and boats out there, and the sun setting while you listen to Ethan or listen to me. And it just, I've never experienced anything like it. And I love anyone doing anything world-class in this small place that we all love to call home, because we know it ain't easy, you know? You know you've got to create something absolutely epic because you're requiring people to come a bloody long way to visit. You're not just on a street corner in London or Toronto or New York or anywhere else. You've got to have people, you've got to give people a reason to travel a bloody long way and take a ferry boat that might break down, leave you stranded. One of my favorite stories ever was when, well, this isn't good, but the ferry came off its wires or rope or chains or whatever, and it started, there was a runaway ferry washing downhill, and then the ferry was stuck, and a speedboat turned up and it had a load of Domino's pizzas on it because someone decided to order a load of pizzas to be delivered to the people on the ferry. Genius. Only in New Brunswick. So that's what I love. Yeah, so that's the same thing goes for all these amazing places that we all love so much here. Anyway, I'm rambling, so again, support your local media. Again, also sad news about Just for Laughs being cancelled this year. I will elaborate on that next week. I was going to talk about that today, but we've run out of time. I've been rambling on for 15 minutes. I apologise. Now get out and go looking for Kate Middleton. If you spot her, give us a shout. Email me any questions, comedy@jamesmullinger.com. Sponsorship opportunities, same. I am very grateful to you for sitting here with me this week, listening to me ramble. One more thing from Tim Andrews here is he's noticed on my posts about he's desperate to get his hands on a UK VHS player so he can watch all his PAL. I don't know if you know this, in UK it was PAL videos, in America it was NTSC. I, of course, have one. Tim, you're welcome to come over here and watch some VHS sometime. But if anyone has a spare UK VHS player, this is literally what the podcast has become. A meat swap for British VHS players. Okay, I'm going to go. Keep your eyes peeled for Kate Middleton. Hope you're okay, Prince. King Charlie, Charles. And thanks, everyone who's been coming out to the shows, doing bingo, and just generally supporting. Keep your fingers crossed that the rumours about Aaron Taylor-Johnson aren't true, and we're going to get a proper James Bond, like Idris Elba or who else? Anyway, send me your thoughts. Who do you think would make a bloody good Bond? Ron James would make a bloody good Bond. That's who. Ron James. That's my call. Ron James for James Bond. I'll be back next week answering more of your questions, talking to you about the upcoming event with Chris Hadfield on the night of the solar eclipse that I'm doing in Florenceville, Bristol. Until then, keep rambling, keep laughing. And hats off to Marcel Lebrun. For doing a thing that, oh my goodness, why don't more millionaires, billionaires do that? Anyway, good night, well, I don't know when you're listening to this. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, whatever it is. I'm off. I've got to stop rambling. It is in the name of the show. Thanks very much for listening. Lots of love.
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.